So hi there, Hamilton. Welcome to the Overseas Athlete Podcast. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me on, Chris.
No, you're welcome. I'm very much looking forward to this. I've got no doubt you've got a very interesting story to tell. So I'll let you kick it off by giving us a bit of a backstory of who you are, where you played, and how you became an overseas athlete.
So basically, my name's Hamilton Thorpe. I was born and raised in Darwin, Northern Territory. And my father was English, so when I grew up as a kid, I always wanted to play in England. You know, that was my dream as a footballer, to grow up there. So, and it was very difficult growing up in the Territory to actually get to where you sort of want to go. And fortunate enough, in the end, managed to go and play overseas and play in the old National League and stuff like that. Yeah.
Interesting. So I've actually never been to Darwin, but I know it's a very it can be a remote area. How does someone get from Darwin to England, to an English club? I think it was at London you moved to when you were 16.
I first trial for Arsenal actually when I was 16, but back then it was much more different than it is today. I was back then I was writing letters, I think, to clubs. Yeah, so I think I wrote maybe 10 or 20 letters to different football clubs, different leagues, and I was playing for the under-20s Australian team as well. So we were touring. I remember we toured America and England. So I got a letter back from Arsenal who were interested in having a look at me. So when I went over to England with the Australian team, I stayed and trained with Arsenal for about 2 months with Arsenal, actually. Unfortunately, I didn't get a contract, but that's where it sort of started off thing. But that was back in, I can't even remember what year it was, but I remember being in the youth team with Andy Cole back then. Ray Parler went on to play for Arsenal as well. So, yeah, it was a very interesting experience.
Very different to now, as you would expect. So going back to obviously writing letters, and then obviously not having footage or DVDs, I would imagine. How did you find the information? How did you, and not jumping on Google obviously and trying to find the recruitment officer at Arsenal back then, how did you actually get these details?
Well, now you're really testing my memory now. That's a really good question, to be honest. How did I get those details? Maybe from looking through, I don't know. I couldn't even answer that now, honestly. I really don't know. Maybe I'm getting old and losing my memory, but I've obviously got it through. Wow, I can't even answer that. It's that long ago. It must be, 34 years ago nearly now, that I don't even know how I even got to that stage. But, yeah, that was how it was back then, and like I said, it was much more challenging to get a trial. Yeah.
And what would they? So, were Arsenal the only one that got back to you that said?
No, there was a few clubs. My father's from a town up north near Manchester called Bury, so I actually trialed with Bury. I signed a contract with Rochdale, who were in the old fourth division back then. When I was 18, ended up staying there two seasons. There was a few, I think I tried for Wigan, Chester City. So there's a few in the a little bit lower divisions and stuff like that. But I ended up a couple of seasons with Rochdale. And, sort of went from there. And, it was very challenging, to be honest. Like when you grow up in Darwin, it's such a different environment. So Darwin's very hot. So the game's much slower. And I'd have to say, the competition isn't so great. So, when you go from there and you go and play down south, or you even play in the state league, or you go and play in the old NSL, it's such a huge, different type of level, and then you go and play overseas, that's even higher level. So it was very difficult at the time. So it took me many years to sort of adjust and finally sort of get somewhere, to be honest. Yeah.
And what was the experience at Arsenal like then back then? So obviously coming from Darwin and do a bit of touring with the Australian team, so no doubt you're around quality players, but I guess the step up, as you say, back then, and probably unknown as well. Like now if you go to Arsenal, you have an idea of what's expected because you have so much access to what's going on in the world. But I guess back then you wouldn't really have much of an idea as to what you're walking into.
No, it was a real huge eye-opener because, you know, you walked into one of the biggest clubs in England, maybe one of the biggest ones in the world as well, and just the training facilities and the coaching and just the level of players. It was huge. It was a huge eye-opener for me. And I thought I was a good player until you go and play against, like, these kids who went on to play in the first team. And they were just a different level, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it was quite daunting. And when you're 16 years old and you leave home for the first time as well, leave your family and friends, and you move to the other side of the world, and just everything is different. And like the conditions, you know, the English weather, even the pitches you were playing on. Even Arsenal had great pitches back in the day, but you know, it rained, it was cold, it was muddy. The game was so much quicker than I was used to. And the English game back then, it was super physical as well. There's something else I wasn't used to. So I found it really difficult to adapt. I think if you came from the southern states in Australia, like, you know, New South Wales or Victoria, you would have played a little bit similar type of game. But like, yeah, coming from the north, it was such a step up for me, yeah, and it took a while, yeah.
And you said you were there for a couple of months. So did they give you enough time, obviously, to try and settle in, knowing that you'd obviously, you know, come from the other side of the world, and to give you enough time to look at you?
It was originally only for about a two-week trial, actually, and they actually liked what they saw. They obviously saw something in me, and they extended it for 2 months in the end. But like back then, I started off playing as a midfielder because I was quite tall. I was like 6'3" as well. So I always sort of was brought up on the Brazilian team of the 70s. So I always wanted to play with the ball a little bit. So, but the challenging thing is when I went to England, because they saw my physicality and my height and something, that they thought I was a forward. They liked the big man up front. So it was the old big bustling forward back in the 90s, and they threw me a lot of the teams when I played for Rochdale, especially, they threw me up front and had never really played in this role before, so it was very different for me. I wasn't really an out and out goal scorer, and it's a very different role, so coming from a midfielder to having your back to goal as well, so I found that very difficult. Yeah.
And just touching quickly on the Arsenal thing before we move on, how did that end then? How was the conversation around, look, we like what we see, but was there something missing? Like, was there something that they were looking for that you maybe didn't have? Or how did the sort of conversation go?
Well, what I remember this sort of took me in the office, the sort of conversation was like we think you're a very good player, and we just have basically better players at the club already, or players just as good. So, yeah, we think that you'll do a good job, but maybe for another team or a little bit lower standards. So, you know, I mean, it's like had a few rejections in my life, and it's something you sort of have to deal with and just get on with it, to be honest, yeah. But it can be quite difficult when you're so young, yeah, because you have this dream of playing in the top league, and you know, sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is how did you deal with that? Obviously, that is your lifelong dream. You're there, you're there every day doing it with Arsenal, as you say, one of the biggest clubs in England, and then you let go. How did you sort of bounce back from that to kick on again?
I think it's very, very challenging, especially when you're young, and I think it's something you just deal with on a day-to-day basis, you know what I mean? It's like any setback you have in life. Don't have to be a professional athlete or anything. You just take a day to go, and it keep going. And, you know, I had a few rejections from clubs in England, and I eventually came back to Australia. and ended up in Adelaide, actually, playing the state league for a team called Port Lion. And I was probably 21 at the time, and I thought, I think maybe the time had passed me to be a professional footballer, you know. Maybe it's not going to work out, but I was fortunate enough for Raul Blanco, who was the West Adelaide coach at the time and former soccer coach. He saw me, offered me a trial, and I signed for West Adelaide back in the old NSL. So, you know, if I look back on my career, I was saying, well, you had all these ups and downs, but, you know, I mean, you sort of persisted. You know, you never really gave up on your dreams, even though I thought maybe this wasn't really working out. But, you know, it really comes down to mentality and character. You know what I mean? It's like, it's very hard to describe, but it's, you know, that's what it is, yeah.
And did you have when you came back to Australia, did you find you had obviously a bigger support system, just being back in your home country, family a little bit closer? Did that make things easier to settle back in and then focus on playing again?
Not for me, really, because I'm, like I said, my parents are all in the family, all in Darwin, you know what I mean? So I had to move. If you wanted to be successful, you had to move. So whether that you go down south and you start up again, or you go overseas. So, you know, I've lived in Europe on and off now for 15 years. So I left Darwin quite at a young age. So I got used to being away from my family and friends. But, that takes a lot of adapting to as well. So you either have it or you don't, and you either stick through. It's not easy. It's very challenging. But it's something that, like I said, it comes down to mentality and how much dedication you have, you know, and how much you really want it.
I was going to say the word sacrifice keeps coming up in these conversations with people. It is what you have to do, isn't it? You do have to make sacrifices to chase that dream.
Yeah. It's definitely a huge sacrifice. And like I said, it's not everyone's got it in them. And, you know, I've known some really great players in the past, and they just didn't have it, you know. So, you know, there's different aspects of becoming professional footballer. And like I said, it's the huge competition that you have to deal with and on a day in, day out basis. Even when you make it you know, there's huge stresses on performing and stuff like that. And I think Arsene Wenger said it in an interview once, it really comes down to your mentality over a period of time. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to play bad games and stuff like that. How can you deal with that? And it becomes a bit of a grind as well. So it can be like quite mentally exhausting. And by the end of my career, I had to retire quite young, about 32, 33. In the end, I was suffering a lot of injuries, but I was sort of done mentally, you know, and I sort of stepped away from football altogether for a long time and had zero interest in it. But I've slowly come back into coaching, doing some coaching now. So, it definitely took its toll on me a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And was that what do you think? Because I know we'll touch on this a bit later, but you did say in the video that you'd sent me around the sort of psychology within football, and you wish you had more access to it. Then, which obviously wasn't available, it wasn't a normal thing. But do you think that would have made a huge difference, being able to have someone to talk to and try and work on that mental side of the game?
I think it definitely would have helped out. You know, I think from a personal standpoint, I probably suffered from pressure a little bit. You know what I mean? I think being able to handle that better and maybe speaking to like a sports psychologist would have helped me. Because I know in my career that's something that sort of held me back, is dealing with pressure and performing well. And, you know, it's like sometimes maybe in the first 5 or 10 minutes of a game, if my first few touches weren't that great, I would probably drop my head a little bit and stuff like that. And it's dealing. I felt like I needed some help, you know, to get over these type of hurdles and deal with this type of thing. And, you know, probably would have made me a better player as well. But that's where we go back to the whole point. It's a mental game as well.
Yeah, I think from a couple of conversations we've had with people, and just knowing that, especially in today's game, and no doubt similar back then, but different, you're going in there, everyone's good, everyone's fit, everyone's fast and strong, and they're all technically good.
Yeah.
So at that level, it's the mental side of the game, which I think does give you the edge, and it's so important now to be aware of it and work on it, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very much, like I said, it's the different aspects of the game, and like today's day and age, yeah, you're up against a lot of competition just to make it. What is it? A very small percentage of kids go on to, from academies, go on to play professional football, and a lot of them quit by the time they're 20. So if you make it to this level of being a professional footballer, that's an amazing achievement within itself. And then can you have a long career? And that's another achievement itself. So, and then you have the old aspect, once you finish your career, what do you do? You know, and that's that divide is, I don't think, probably talked about enough, that once a lot of players retire, is filling in the gap, which I found quite difficult. It probably took me probably 4 or 5 years to really move on from that type of role that I was as a professional athlete to sort of get back into like the normality of life. And I still probably haven't figured out exactly what I'm doing.
And was that from when you retired at like the, as you say, the early age? You just had enough of football and then you didn't know what to do? No particular plans?
No, I had zero plans on what to do. Obviously, I did pretty well from football, so I set myself up not too bad. But I think what a lot of people don't realize is that you play football from a very young age, and a lot of the times you'll play throughout your 20s, which is, you know, some of your best years of your life in a way, when your friends are like traveling around Europe and having a great time and partying. You know, you're in the trenches working hard and stuff like that. So it feels like you've missed out a little bit of your young years. So I went a little bit, I'd say, crazy, but I definitely made up for my 20s in a bit of a period after I retired and enjoyed myself. And I never really thought about, okay, what do I do now in my life? You know, and it took me a long time like to readjust in that period. Yeah, for sure. That's, I think that is probably something that players, I don't know if they have someone to talk to, is just before they retire, is that they really need to start looking at what's going to give them fulfillment after, you know, they stop kicking a ball. Yeah, that's a very important thing to do.
Yeah, it can be quite easy to just get lost, and I know that there's a lot more resource out there now for people. I've got a friend that runs a really good podcast called Second Wind Academy, and the reason he does that is that it's that transition from sports to life after sports and how you deal with that. But it is important because, as you say, you're used to that regimented training, daily routine. You know what you have to eat, what you have to drink, when you're training, where you're playing, to nothing. You know, like, what do I do now? What do I do with my days?
Yeah, it's very true. And plus you got the camaraderie of your teammates, you know, day in, day out. And it's a bit of a boys club, and you're all having fun. And then all of a sudden it's like you have to grow up. And you don't have that anymore. And like you said, you don't have that structure. And also it comes down to, it's like you're playing in front of 20, 30, 40,000 people. And you have these highs and you have these lows. And so that's hard to replicate once you retire, because you'll go into, and you like think your normality of real life and think, well, this is quite boring. You know, I'm never really going to have that same type of feeling again. So that's why... I think the transitional period for a lot of athletes is very difficult, unless you find yourself another goal and give you something else to sort of work towards.
It's difficult, as you mentioned there. It's not like there's 20,000 people cheering you on in an office when you're working. You know what I mean? It's a very different it's a very different scenario, and it can be very tough.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Yeah, so like I think a lot of my friends going into real estate, or a lot of footballers going into real estate, or different type of aspects of thing. And yeah, it's just it's definitely not the same. But you know, like for myself, I stuck around with sport. I do fitness training now, and that's okay. And the good thing about that, it actually keeps me fit, in a sense. But I feel like, I feel like I need to give back to the game a little bit. So I decided to go back into coaching, just a local football team here in Berlin, and see if I enjoy it. And this is with juniors. So I've done that for 6 months. So I still haven't figured out if I enjoy the coaching aspect of football, to be honest. I think I'll do that in the next season or so, because I'm interested in maybe getting my licenses over here done. But if I'm, to be honest, like for me, if I wanted to be a coach, probably the biggest reward if I actually moved back to Darwin and did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like help the kids, especially in the territory where I think it's very difficult if you have any talent to get noticed by anyone, and then taking the next step up to having an opportunity. I think it's the biggest hurdle they have up there.
And what would you, if that was the case, and obviously knowing what you know now and the path to take, not that you're involved, you know, 100% now, but yeah. What advice would you give them, the kids in Darwin or Northern Territory, around if that's their dream and like that, they've got some talent, where would they start?
I think advice is difficult. What I probably could offer them is that I still have quite a few contacts still in the A-League there, who, you know, old players I used to play with, like John Aloisi and that and stuff like that, where I could pick up a phone and I say, you know, I've got these two talented kids. And I did that a few years ago when I was back living in Sydney. A friend of mine, Phil Moss, he was, I think, Central Coast Mariners assistant coach. I was good friends with him. And I was in Cairns at the time where my parents live now. And I saw a couple of kids, had a bit of talent. And I sort of rang him up and I said, would it be all right to get these boys come down for a trial for a couple of weeks? And he said, yeah, the door's open. So I spoke to these young lads, and this is where I go about mentality. When I gave them the option, I said, well, you'll have to pay for it. Yeah. You get this experience, you go and train with an A-League club. And if they like you, you might get a contract. But in the end, these two young lads, and weren't that young, they're actually in the early 20s, they decided not to go. Yeah. So that's where it comes down to, like, do you really want it? You know, I mean, you're going to take yourself out of this comfort zone that you have, playing your friends up in Cairns. Or if you want to be a professional footballer, you need to take the next step up. So, yeah, I suppose, like I said, at the end of the day, I can open doors, which probably are not there. But advice-wise, yeah, it's a bit tricky for that.
And with your own fitness coaching that you do now, you've got your own clients and you're coaching players at a club as well.
Yeah.
Do you try and help them with the mentality side of it? Do you speak about that a lot, that because you think it's so important?
What, to my football kids?
Yeah, how old are they? Are they be young?
And they're young. They're under 12s. I think, you know, at that age, they're just having fun. You know, so, yeah, I don't really speak to them about that. Even though they know I'm a ex-professional footballer, yeah, I don't. I think at that age, and I think in the German system as well of coaching, that at that age they're just trying to just let them play. They haven't really gone to like the tactical or too technical parts of it. Yeah,
yeah, we find that here now as well. You've got that 9 to 12-year-old group here in Australia, and like the SAP, the skill acquisitions program, where it's just, you know, four key skills, just play, you know.
Yeah.
And then it starts to change a bit after that. But you can see the ones, you can see the kids, you know, that are switched on and are always listening and are desperate and they run around. But it's interesting as well to see how many go from that and are good to when they're 15, 16, if that's still the case when a lot of things change.
That's very true, because like back when I was – before I moved back overseas, I was living in Sydney and I was coaching kids in Bondi actually. And one of the kids – and he was probably only 10, 11 at the time, Massimo Luongo, plays for the Socceroos.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And if you said to me if Massimo was going to go on and play, have a pretty good career in England and play, do well for the Socceroos, I would have said no. When I saw him as an 11-year-old, I didn't think he had it, what it took at all, to be honest. But there you go, to show that some kids may not impress you at such a young age, but then they go on to do very well for themselves. Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise for me, to be honest.
What was it that didn't stand out, or you didn't think he had? Was there something you thought that maybe he was missing?
I think, you know, it's like when you see kids that are 10 to 12, like you can spot very talented kids who are very technical, very good on the ball, just have it. And, he wasn't special for me, you know. So that's what there's been this thing is like people will say to me, like, who was the good teenage kids when I was playing the old NSL who I thought, like, these kids are very good? And one comes to mind, I would say Brett Holman. I played with Brett in Parramatta Power, and Brett Holman was 16, 17, just coming through. And I knew straight away, this kid is going to be very good. Great, great talent. And then another guy, I don't know if you've heard of him, played with me at Perth Glory, a guy called Ivan Ergic.
I've heard the name, yeah.
Yeah, like he was only 18 at the time, but obviously he's a little bit older. But, yeah, like great technical skills and stuff like that. But like I said, you never know. Like you could say that about Tim Cahill. Probably wasn't that special growing up, but just an absolute legend, really. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can see the ones that have that, the ones that have got to the top, whether it's the Kuehls, Cahills, Vidukas, you know, these guys that had to travel the same path as you, that had to leave, you know, Australia at a very young age.
Yeah.
And I think that probably makes you stronger, the experiences you've gone through. And it's hard to do at the time when you're 15, 16, but if you do stick at it and keep working and like that, get the mentality right, that you just keep going, then good things can happen.
Yeah, it's very, like, very true. It's like when I was 16, I was offered a Australian Institute scholarship at the time. I don't know if it's around anymore, but it used to be one of the main things for all the young, talented football kids. And I turned it down because I wanted to go and try for Arsenal, because I thought that was a thing. But now looking back on it, it's actually probably something I should have done. That would have gave me better coaching at the time and probably a better setup to where I wanted to be, you know. So, yeah, the way I did it was very difficult.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Probably a better foundation if you had a year or two in there of that full-time environment, then going to an Arsenal, you'd probably be a much better and different player to what you were, you know, going straight there.
Yeah, for sure. Like going straight from down, you know, I just didn't have the coaching. I was just raw, really. You know, I mean, you don't have the level of competition, you don't have the coaching. So, you know, I was just, yeah, it was all off my own back. And obviously, I learned a lot along the way. But I look back at my career, and to be honest, yeah, could I have done better? Like I signed for Portsmouth with John Aloisi and Craig Foster and Robert Ennis back in the day when Terry Venables was Socceroos coach, and he took four of the Australians to Portsmouth, and that was sort of like a high and low period for myself. But I look back on that and I think, well, maybe I should have done better. You know, I wish I did things better, that I would change in my career.
Is that from yourself? Is that you wish you'd done, as in more training, different training? Is there things that you think you could have, you had control over?
Yeah, that's exactly how I look at it. Like, if I could talk to kids today, and one thing I regret not is that, like, practicing more, you know, like practicing more on my weaknesses. I could have done more with my first touch, my finishing, my dribbling, spending more time on doing stuff like that, become a better footballer. That's something I look back on and think, yes, I could have worked harder, because you get to a stage where you've got to work hard to make it. And even when you make it, you got to work just as hard to stay there and become better. And I wish I did that. And, you know, like I said, hindsight's a wonderful thing. And all you can do is pass it on to other people, younger players, and hopefully they don't make the same mistakes that you did, you know. So, but that's life.
And how long were you at Portsmouth? How long were you there?
Well, originally I signed a 3-year deal with Portsmouth, but I only stayed 1 year because I don't want to get into the underlying facts, but Terry Venables was apparently taking money from under the table from our transfers. So he was the Portsmouth chairman at the time as well. So he had these like conflicting interests. So he got the sack. Our coach got the sack at the time, and then they brought Alan Ball in. And he basically said, all the people that LTL brought in, you're going to be playing the reserves, or we're going to loan you out. And I was like, I had about 3 or 4 offers to get loaned out to like second and third division teams at the time. And I spoke to my father. I was like, you know what? I came here to play in Portsmouth back in the championship back there, play a high level. I'm not interested at all. And that's another regret I have, because after a year, they paid us out and I moved back to Australia. I said, fuck, I want to get out of here. It's like leaving a bad taste in my mouth. I took the money and I went back home. But in hindsight, I wish I stuck it out, because I think I would have had quite a good career in England. And I wish I went, you know what, I'll go out and loan, or I put the work in, instead of just sort of like getting out of there. Yeah.
And was that, I know you said you spoke to your dad. Back then, did you have an agent when you signed for Portsmouth and then got released from there, did you have an agent, or did you have to deal with all that yourself?
No, I didn't have an agent. I think a few of the other players might over the time, but I didn't have an agent. I was just dealing with the club. Because when I signed, I was playing for West Adelaide, and I was actually the only player who went to Portsmouth who wasn't playing in the Socceroos setup. Like the other boys were in the Socceroos setup, and I was the only player that wasn't. So I think Terry Venables and Raul Blanco, they were watching a game, I think, when I was playing against Sydney Olympic at the time. And I scored a goal, and I scored a few goals. And I think Terry Venables was watching and liked what he saw. And he approached me at the end of the season, actually. The club obviously approached West Adelaide and said, we'd like to sign him. So, yeah, I sort of did all my contract as well, like money and stuff like that. I probably didn't, yeah. It would have probably helped to have an agent, but.
What were those experiences like? Like sitting in a boardroom, I'm assuming, you know, going through contracts?
It was a funny experience. Like, I was about to go backpacking around Europe with my mates, to be honest. Like, back then, you probably had about 3 months off when the NSL season finished. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to go backpacking around Europe. And I remember getting a phone call when I was in Darwin from my chairman of West Adelaide. He says, don't go backpacking yet. There might be a club who's going to take you to England. You're free. And I was like, wow. He goes, yeah, Portsmouth interested in signing you. So what happens, I think the manager at the time was in Sydney doing something, scouting or something. So they flew me down to Sydney. I met up with the manager, a guy called Terry Fennec. And he's just basically sat down with me. He gave me a piece of paper. He goes, here's your contract. This is what we're going to give you. And it was like non-negotiable. Yeah. It wasn't a bad contract, but it was much more than I was earning anyway. So for me, it was like a dream come true, honestly, for me. So it's like, I just signed it. Yeah.
How old were you then? How old were you when that happened?
I was 23. You know, so I think it was only my second. The funny thing about it is, like, when I played for West End, like, I was playing as a defender, as a center half. And then we hadn't scored a goal in 3 or 4 games. Yeah. So my coach one day in training comes up to me, goes, we're thinking about putting you up front this week in the game against Marconi or something. He goes, didn't you play as a forward as a kid? I said, not really. Because I was good. Yeah, obviously I was tall. I was good in the air. And I was like, he goes, yeah, we're going to try it. I said, well, you can try it. Yeah. So it's a strange idea. So, yeah, they put me up front for this game. And I think I scored after 10 minutes, a header against Marconi. And then I think I went on to score 9 goals in 11 games as a forward. So it was a very strange thing. And at the end of the season, yeah, I went straight to England.
So they signed you as a striker?
Yes. They signed me as a striker, fully known that I'd transitioned there. And even Terry Venables said to me, he says, I don't expect you to be in the first team so much in the first year at Portsmouth, yeah, because I know it's a transitional period for you. But he goes, in the second year, I expect you to be starting. But that didn't come to fruition. Like, I was sort of involved straight away. I was still adapting as a forward, though. It was a very, a very sort of new role to me and strange.
Did you feel a lot more, I'm sure you did, but did you feel a lot more prepared having your Arsenal experience and knowing sort of what you had to walk into as a 16-year-old, but then being playing in the NSL over here with obviously professionals, guys in the Socceroos team, so at a much higher level? Did you go back with a lot more self-confidence that you knew what to expect, but better, you're all round better as well?
It's a good question. You think I would have done, but not really. I thought, like, from my experience from Arsenal and then playing in the NSL, which for me was like a step up, I thought, but I adapted pretty quickly. But then I go into Portsmouth, I thought that was another step up in level as well, you know. And maybe that had a lot to do that I wasn't 100% comfortable as a forward. You know, I was probably more comfortable, okay, play me at the back, yeah. But then, like, having to score goals and stuff like that. And it felt like I was back at being a young kid again, yeah, that I still had to learn. So that, it was very interesting in that type of aspect, yeah.
Yeah, that would be. I mean, like that, moving country again, at least you had some experience and you were a little bit older, probably would have helped. But then you've got the other challenge of thinking you're a defender and all of a sudden being signed for Portsmouth as a striker.
Yeah, and the thing about that is a lot of people don't know about that, you've made this transition. So you have the stresses from, like, the supporters and stuff like that expect you to be, like, this goal scorer and stuff. Like, well, they don't really know the backstory of how you sort of need to sort of grow into this role a little bit more. But I think John Aloisi did an article last year talking about it, like, our whole period at Portsmouth, and, like, was saying about myself that I was a very good player. And me and John have spoken about it. He was actually told me, we were in London once. I bumped into him in London. And he said to me, you were a better footballer than me. Yeah. You just weren't a natural goal scorer. Yeah. And that was true. Like, John always grew up as a forward. He was more natural goal scorer. Even when we, like, trained together, you could see it. I was never a natural goal scorer. I needed more time to get molded into this role. So, yeah. It's interesting. You can play in all these different positions. And, like, when I played in Sweden at the end of my career, I remember I played for a team called IFK Norrköping. And then one game we were playing against IFK Gothenburg, yeah. And I started, they signed me as a defensive midfielder. And I'm like, okay, that's an interesting role. I'll play this role. And in one game, I'd gone from central midfield to playing at the back for about 15 minutes because one of the defenders got injured. And in the second half, we were losing. I played as a forward. So I played all these different roles. So it's like, it's good and bad. You're like the jack of all trades and master of none, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a that's interesting as well, actually, because you want to be versatile so that you're part of a squad, but at the same time, you want to be the best that you can be in your position. I suppose that's hard if people don't – they're sort of pegging you in different spots with that versatility.
Well, I sort of found that out throughout my career. So one club might sign me as a forward, for a forward, and then I remember signing for Perth Glory, and he wanted to play me at the back the next season. Yeah. So you're going from one total different position to go and play in, you know, maybe a position you're more comfortable, but you haven't played there for 2 or 3 years. So even that transition is quite difficult. And then the next season, another club would come in maybe, and then they want me as a forward. So it was a bit of a yo-yo effect, but yeah, but like that was quite challenging as well, like I said.
It would be. It's that'd be a difficult thing to try and overcome as well. I mean, you think you go in, you play, you want to play, you want to sign at these teams, but difficult, I suppose, mentally for you to go, well, yeah, some guy sees me as a defender, someone sees me as a striker, someone as a defensive midfielder. It's hard. I suppose it might be hard to know for you to believe where your best position is.
Well, that's very true. I sort of even look back on it thinking, where was I best at, you know? I mean, I didn't even think I was a defender either, to be honest. Like, I don't think I was a natural defender. So, like I said, when I started out as a kid, I was a midfielder. But for some reason, some coach put me in the defense and I did quite well. But I don't think I was a natural defender and I wasn't really a natural forward. I just thought I could sort of play in these different roles and do quite well. But I'd probably say that I probably could be a better forward.
Yeah.
I just maybe not like a, like I said, a natural goal scorer, but I definitely could create quite a lot of chances with different people. Yeah.
So the big man in the 4-4-2 would be ideal for you up front with a strike partner.
Let me tell you, the playing football in the '90s in England, especially the lower you go, it was all about. Defender gets the ball and just hoof it up to the forward and win a header or try and chest it down and bring in the midfielders into the game. And that was was a long ball specialist back then. Yeah. It wasn't really my ideal game. But they tried to, like I said, when I grew up, I always wanted to be a ball player. But they tried to mold me into this big tough guy, and I was quite timid even though I was physically quite big, because it wasn't never really my game. I didn't want to be natural. This winner every header and be this bustling forward, but I probably should have done. I should have been more of this mean type of player, and I think I would have done even better in England, to be honest. Yeah
trying to adapt like that, as you say, then it's hard for, I guess, coming back to, say, the psychology of it or the mentality of it, is if you had someone to talk to back then and maybe help you through that period and go, no, you know what, I'm going to be at this big bustling striker and I'm going to put all my energy into that, it might have made a difference. But you're probably getting thrown around, as you say, a bit of a yo-yo effect and with no one to help you or guide you to do one thing better than the other.
I think that's a really, really good point, because I think that's what's missing sometimes. Is I wish that a coach sat me down and goes, all right, these are your good, great qualities, but we need to train these other qualities into you. You need to get better at these. And I think that's a missing link, even when people are professional, when they go to clubs, is that the coach still needs to coach the player on what they need to do better on, or how to go about it as well. Because some people think you're the finished article when you're not. And you never really are the finished article. And I think a lot of players who played under Pep Guardiola have said the same. He still coaches the players, even though he's got world-class players. He still coaches them to play football, and they learn a lot from him. And I think that's a really key ingredient when you're coaching kids, even at a high level. You need to still coach on an individual basis as well. And I wish that happened more to me, that someone really sort of said, we need to get you better at this. Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It would have made a lot of sense and no doubt a lot of help.
Yeah.
Going back to your the comment you made, so you're obviously just going back to the Portsmouth thing, because I find that quite interesting, and I just want to dive a little bit deeper into how that happened. But the release and them coming in to say, all right, anyone signed under Venables, we're going to basically let you go. Were you still your own agent then with no agent? Did you have to go in and listen to those conversations?
I did. I think they actually organized a guy, an agent, to come in and said, okay, we're going to offer you 60% of your 2 years you have left or something like that. So there was a bit of a negotiation with an agent who was dealing with it in the end. And then and I was like, you know what? Yeah, I just want to get out of here. Because they basically said, okay, if you stay, you're going to be running around the field and the paddock with the reserves. Mm. Yeah, and that wasn't really that enticing at the time. It's like, I don't want to do that. But like I said, looking back on it, I should have just stuck it out for 2 years and saw what happened. And I wish I did, because I came back to Australia and I thought, get me out of here. And I went, I think, back to West Adelaide. And I wasn't the same player for that next season. You know, I definitely lost a lot of confidence, lost my sort of desire to play after that, actually. You know, I was thinking, remember having a conversation with my West Adelaide coach, Adrian Santrak, and I was thinking about retiring at 25, that it sort of just deflated me, that whole experience, you know. But I'm sort of glad I sort of persevered through that and went on to sort of finish out my career. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, as you say, a very tough thing to happen. You probably had a few like that, as you say, not rejections or setbacks, but the Arsenal one, and then that one, you've made it back again. You've got a three-year deal, which is obviously a big, you know, faith in you from the club, and then to have that happen. And I suppose you didn't really have much control over that. As you say, 60% of your contract, take it or hang around and not play. It's a difficult conversation, especially if you've not really got anyone in there on your side, if you're trying to do it yourself. And it's probably something you've never come across either. You know, it's the first time you've got to deal with a situation like that.
Well, that's very true. You know, like you said, you can stay there and you can get alienated and you can feel really alone. And, you know, you can feel really alone even when it's not like that, you know, when you're sort of moving around different countries and different cities. And I think I had 10, 11 different clubs in my time. So you have different teammates, different setups. Mm. So you're readjusting to, you know, all the time. And I remember even when I was playing it, I was living in a house outside of Portsmouth and being quite unhappy and depressed. Mm. You know, I mean, it's not all glamour being a professional footballer. You know, I mean, there's a lot of lonely days. Yeah.
And lonely, and as you say, and we'll get on to the other ones, because you've played in, was it Sweden, Norway and Singapore? You've had stints in those countries as well?
Yeah. Yeah, they were a little bit different, because Sweden and Norway are sort of towards the end of my career. I was in my 30s. And before I went, I was actually, who was I playing? I was playing in State League, I think, for Manly. At the time, I was sort of part-time then, and Robbie Slater was coaching us. Manly or Northern Spirit, one of the other. It was Northern Spirit. I was playing in the NSL. But an agent approached me and said, we've got the Swedish team interested in you, defensive midfielder. And I was like, just moved back to Sydney. I was living in Bondi Beach. And I was like, it was summer. I was like, oh, I don't know if I really want to go to Sweden. I was really having a good time. And then I had this conversation. I remember Robbie Slater, and I asked him, what do you think I should do? And he goes, you know, you're 30 years old. It's probably going to be one of your last moves. You're going to regret it if you don't go. And I sort of took that with me, and I thought, yeah, you're probably right. So I signed in Sweden and ended up staying 2 or 3 years there, and I really enjoyed the experience for it. But it was a different time in my life. I think, like, you've sort of all gone through all these ups and downs throughout your whole career. By the end, you can deal with them. It's like anything, you can deal with them much, much better and easier as well. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot more life experience that it doesn't affect you as much as it might have done as a 16 or a 20-year-old.
Absolutely, and I suppose that's the only thing that comes down to experience, isn't it? So you know how to handle situations better. You know, you have to go through. Thank God today I'm not playing while social media is around. I mean, like, you get absolutely destroyed on social media. You know, back in my day, I remember fans used to write letters to the club, yeah? And I used to go to the mailbox and he goes, fan letter. And I remember reading a couple of letters from supporters who were trashing me. Yeah, they wanted me out of my club, out of their club. And when I remember first reading a letter that was very negative and really had a negative effect on me, you know, it was quite depressing to read that, and how to deal with such this negativity from your, like, fans. And like, after a while, like, you get on with it and it's like water off a duck's back. But yeah, like, playing today with the social media, I really want to enjoy it, that's for sure.
Where was that? When did that happen?
Well, that was actually at Portsmouth as well. Yeah, I remember, because I was involved, I think, in the first 9 games or something like that, coming off the bench most of the time. So I think I started one. I think in my second game, I scored a goal. So I was doing 9 appearances. So I was doing quite well. And then I had a hernia operation. So that kept me out for like 2 or 3 months. So after that, I never featured again. But yeah, like, I think we were just getting a lot of stick just because this whole situation with Terry Venables and the money, and the club wasn't doing that well at the time. I think we were in the bottom half of the table. So, you know, sometimes you use as a scapegoat. You think that you're just taking the money. But yeah, I was, like I said, I was injured a lot anyway, so.
Difficult to go through. That's a lot of pressure, that sounds like, on at still you were quite a young man at that point as well.
Yeah, and it's a lot of pressure. And like I said, I was only 23, and still I hadn't – it's not that young in today's terms, but, like, for me, I was still young mentally to playing at such a high level and having to deal with these outside circumstances around football. I was very naive to it still, you know what I mean? It's like, I found it very difficult and challenging. Yeah. And I think that's what the aspect of it, when it comes down to the mentality of how is your mentality? Can you stick it out? Because you're going to have some dark times. Yeah. And can you go through this? Can you weather the storm? And can you push on and keep believing in yourself and keep, you know what I mean, like, keep pushing and to see it through? Yeah, it's very challenging. Yeah, I just won't say it otherwise for young kids coming through, that it's easy, because it's not easy. Yeah.
No, especially at any level, it's difficult. But as you say, you can have – the overseas part is just one challenge. There's so many other things that go around it. And I think being in a foreign country just obviously magnifies those problems, because the loneliness would kick in, you know, a lot more than if that was happening at your local club, but you've got your parents there or your wife or whatever it may be. But being in a foreign country just magnifies that, and magnifies the pressure, the loneliness, the thoughts in your head that, you know, you've got no one to talk to about. It's difficult, very difficult.
And I like I said, yeah, what you're saying then, I think it's hard enough. Like when you, it's challenging enough. You play in the A League and you go to Europe, and that's a big step up and thing. But like when I went over, I'm just going to say to England, I think there might have been only 20 something Australians in Europe playing, and now there's over 100 and something. So it's obviously much easier, more access to go to Europe. And Australians are more accepted as footballers than they used to. I remember that they still would make fun of us in England, and especially the club. I think we're cricketers. Yeah, we're better at cricket. So they never really, you know, had the respect of Australians being good at football. So we had to deal with that as well. And that was very challenging. And I suppose I think the concept that it's like Craig Johnson. Remember Craig Johnson? I think he had a great book, and he sort of talks about stuff like that. Or, you know, you're dealing with the mentality that that you always have to prove that you're good enough. Yeah.
Have to prove even more. And I think it's funny you say that with like the players, as you say now, I think it's a lot more accepted that Australian players are good players, and we're sort of going through that process again now, I think, with coaches. We're starting to see more and more coaches be successful, but Ange is obviously the main one that's gone over, and like that, everywhere he's gone, he's been doubted. Australia don't have good coaches. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about, but he just proves that success. Now Muscat's doing it, and there's loads of coaches now doing the same thing. It's good to see, but it sounds a little bit like it's repeating itself, but in that different role.
I think, it's exactly the same how we, you know, I would say Australian players back in the 90s had to deal moving to Europe. You know, I'm sure a lot of the older players would say the same, like Graham Arnold when I think he played in Holland and stuff like that. And like what you said now, what Ange is going through, like Australian coaches had the same perception, and slowly it's changing, which is a really good thing. Yeah, he's doing a fantastic job. He's doing Australia proud, to be honest. Australia's producing these days.
I'm looking forward to see how Tottenham go this year. I'm confident that they're gonna go very well under him.
Yeah, I think they'll do pretty well. I think it'll get them playing good football. I've seen a few of the trial games, and they're definitely playing. They're trying to play the ball a lot more. It'd be quite interesting. Yeah, I think it's a challenging club to work for. Very demanding, but very challenging club to work for. Yeah. So, if he finishes in the top six for me, I think he's done a fantastic job. Yeah.
Yeah. Seems to thrive in that sort of environment, doesn't he? He likes the doubters. He loves to prove people wrong.
Yeah. He's had a great career, and he's a great coach. You know, I remember I played against him when he was South Melbourne coach, and he was always, top notch back then. So it doesn't really surprise me that he's gone on to be very highly successful. Yeah. And it's great for Australian coaching. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. Well, I'll wrap this up for you, Hamilton. We've covered a lot. I really, really appreciate your time. Giving all your, the experiences that you had and challenging ones at that.
Yeah.
I suppose it's what would you say to kids now? Your sort of last piece of parting advice of someone who's been there and done it and had really, really challenging times. It's obviously, if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do, and really work through those challenges.
Yeah, like if I had to give young kids advice, I would say, keep working hard. You know, it's the basic skills. Work on your skill set. Never stop working on your weakness and stuff like that. And at the end of the day, like I said, it's your mentality that's going to get you through. And if you get rejected, and we all do, and that's part and parcel of life, is to pick yourself up and keep pushing on and see where it goes. You know, it's a wonderful journey. You know, it's like I said, it's full of ups and downs, and it took me to some amazing places, and it took me out of Darwin. You know, and like if you would have known back when growing up in Darwin that I'd be living in Europe 15 years and now I'm in Berlin. So like, it's crazy, but yeah, that's all I have to say.
The opportunities and rewards are there. You just have to take the risks and not be scared to get knocked back now and again.
Exactly the point. Yeah. Take the risks. And see where it goes. Yeah. That's what I have to say.
Fantastic. Now, Hamilton, again, I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Chris.
No problem.